On the subject of wise speech, so most of you know we're studying the Four Noble Truths this year, and so we're working at this point with the different elements of the Eightfold Path, and this month's theme has been wise speech, and we've been focusing on wise speech for almost a month now. And we've had several great talks on this subject to give us guidance about how to work with wise speech and to inspire us to really look at it in our practice. And I think we've all been, in our own ways, applying the different suggestions we've had from our teachers for working with wise speech. So this week is probably a good time to reflect on how things have been for us this month. How has the process gone? What have we learned in this month on wise speech? So I thought I'd get us started today by sharing something about how it's been with me this month working with wise speech. And so these are some of the things I've noticed and have been thinking about this month. So one of the first things I recognized was that, you know, usually when I think about wise speech, I think about speaking kindly and in a helpful way to my friends and my family and the other people that I interact with in my daily life. You know, I think about it more in terms of my personal life and my personal relationships. But this time, even before that, what occurred to me was how damaging it is to our community and our society when people don't no longer even try to adhere to the guidance for wise speech. And as we've talked about over the past several weeks, the Buddha has some very clear and helpful guidelines for wise speech. And just to review these quickly, he counsels us to avoid false speech, lying, deception, and misleading statements, to avoid divisive speech that creates conflict and discord and separation among people, to avoid harsh speech that's abusive and insulting and hurtful, and to avoid idle chatter, speech that's just pointless and frivolous and meaningless and wastes our time and energy. And on the positive side, he counsels us to cultivate truthfulness, honest and accurate speech, kindness, speaking in a way that's gentle, compassionate, and considerate, beneficial, speaking in ways that are helpful and useful and actually can contribute to the other person's well-being, and timeliness, speaking at the right time and place, really thinking about the context in which we're speaking and the impact of our words and whether the person we're speaking to actually is in a place where they can benefit from what we say. So all really, really good, helpful advice. And yet it seems as if these days, rather than cultivating truthfulness, kindness, and beneficial speech, as a society, we're more often cultivating the opposite. False speech, divisive speech, and harsh speech. These are all around us. And when we aren't hearing these, then there's the idle chatter of the next fad that we can see on YouTube or TikTok or wherever. I remember seeing a bumper sticker not too long ago that said, "Make lying wrong again." And that really kind of got to me because it just seems so sad that it should even be necessary to have a bumper sticker like that. And yet, you know, that's kind of where we are these days. So when I began to reflect on these things, well, naturally, the first reaction I had was to look at who I was going to blame, you know, who I feel is responsible for this trend. But then I thought, I better wait a minute here, because if I don't, I'm going to be right in the middle of all of that divisive and harsh and abusive speech that I was just thinking about how damaging it was just a moment ago. And so I thought, no, uh-uh. And I paused and realized that the lesson I needed to take away from this wasn't anything about who was at fault, but just really how important wise speech is and how much suffering it causes when we don't pay attention to it, and how I need to think about my own speech, that it really does matter. So the second thing I considered when thinking about wise speech was, it wasn't only about how I talk to other people, but also about how I talk to myself and what my internal voice was saying to me. And this is a point that's been brought up by several teachers, so I get the feeling that this is something that's really important and comes up for all of us. And so as I thought about this, I began to ask myself, as I listened to my thoughts and my internal voice, was this speech kind and beneficial? Was it truthful? Or was it harsh and critical? Maybe not entirely accurate. I should say that, you know, one of the things that really has improved since I've started practicing is this tone of speech I use with myself. The voice I use with myself really does these days tend to be kinder and more patient and less critical than it used to be, and actually more geared to being helpful than to criticism and shame. And I think part of this comes from the development of metta and realizing that I deserve metta myself. But I think it also has to do with realizing that our thoughts and actions do arise out of causes and conditions. The situation at the time, past experiences, just the nature of the human mind. So it isn't as personal. I don't take it as personally as I once did. And that makes it easier to just recognize, oh, this was not so wise. This actually was pretty good, without making it all about me. Now, having this kind of recognition doesn't mean that we don't notice when something is unskillful. Far from it. It's more from recognizing that the fact that we've done something unskillful or said something unskillful doesn't mean that we're terrible or worthless. It just means that in that moment, we didn't respond wisely. And the next time, we can try to do better. But as I thought about this more, I noticed that it's not only my internal speech about myself, but internal speech about things that arise in my day-to-day life and my experience that's important. Again, what does my inner voice say? Is it kind, truthful, and beneficial, or harsh and divisive? I was really inspired by Tweri's talk when she talked about wise speech and thinking about whether what I was, you know, speaking about to myself or thinking about was really worthwhile and beneficial. And that was something I hadn't thought about so much. I'd thought more about, you know, the tone of criticism or harshness. But that aspect of, is this really worth thinking about? Is this really worth having a dialogue with myself about? You know, for example, as she mentioned, you know, did I really need to be going over my to-do list while I'm meditating? Do I really need to hash over, you know, one more time the latest political scandal? You know, are these things even worth thinking about? Or if they are worth thinking about at some point, is this the right time to be thinking about them? And so that's a whole another aspect. So paying attention to our internal voice, we might think this is more like mindfulness of thought than wise speech per se, but I found it was really useful. And not only because of the effect of on myself, but for others too. When I actually did choose to speak aloud, I found that, you know, it was really good to notice the tone of my thoughts before I spoke them. And it did help me to refrained to pause, to stop seeing things that maybe I would later regret, and that's really important. And I found it was also really good to notice the thought patterns that I had that were harsh or divisive or, you know, maybe gossipy and not truthful. And then when those came up, to try not to encourage or feed those ways of thinking, at least to the extent I was able. And I do admit it is challenging, definitely challenging. I think with people I know, it's a little bit easier because I know more about their situation. And if they say things that are frustrating or irritating to me or do things that might cause me to say something not very nice to them, at least I know them enough so I have some sense of why they might do or say these things. And if I understand that, I can be a little bit more compassionate and a little bit more restrained. But with people I don't know, you know, like those political figures that are out there all the time, it's more difficult. The anger and harsh thoughts when I'm, you know, listening to the news, they just come up. And sometimes I'm even kind of resistant to toning them down because I think, well, you know, what I'm thinking is really true. This person or these people really are doing things that are harmful. And yet when I reflect on it, does ranting and getting angry really help? Well, no, I know it doesn't. So I think this is an ongoing issue for me, understanding how and when to speak about current issues wisely. And perhaps it is for you too. So when we started our practice with right speech, this first week that we started, I was away from home down in Florida visiting my cousin. And in a way that made it a little harder for me to remember to practice because I was, you know, in a different environment. I wasn't here to go to Sims. I had a lot of different things going on that I don't usually have going on. But in another way, it was a really good opportunity because I was in an ordinary, everyday life environment. I was with people who were, you know, mostly sympathetic to Buddhist practice, but were not really practitioners themselves. So what did I notice from that week or so? Well, on the good side, I could see that for the most part, my speech towards my cousin was naturally kind and with good intent. I wanted to be kind and friendly and supportive and beneficial and all of those good things. So that was good, you know. But I could also see times when speech that was not so wise crept in. Now, one of the things that happened a lot was when we were reading or listening to or watching the news, very quickly, we'd get irritated and upset, and harsh and angry speech would pop out. Now, pretty much we agree in our view, so it's not like we were fighting or anything like that. But there were times when we definitely fed on and encouraged each other's anger and irritation, and that is not such a good thing. In fact, we'd sometimes reach the point where we would just agree that we needed to change the subject, because it just was not helpful. And another thing I noticed was that there were times when I was tempted to give unsolicited advice. Now, my cousin had recently moved into a new condo, and so she was still in the process of sorting through and arranging her things and deciding what to keep, what to give away, where to put stuff. And I was tempted to offer my own opinions about what she should get rid of and what she should do to get her new place organized. And so I'd often need to just kind of pause because I would remember how much I hate to get that kind of advice and how usually whatever the person is telling me I should do, I already know I need to do. I just haven't gotten there yet. And I don't want to be reminded, not really. So that was something I noticed. And I also noticed the tone of our conversation when we were talking about the rest of our relatives. A lot of times what we said was just filling each other in on what was going on with the rest of the family. But maybe other times we crossed a line into something more like gossip. Maybe, maybe not. I wasn't really sure, but I was more aware than I normally would be, since wise speech was there in my mind. Now, of course, in our interactions, we probably had our fair share of what might be called frivolous speech. Speech about restaurants we wanted to try out, or TV shows, you know, whatever. But this mostly seemed more like friendly and pleasant conversation. And for me, it is confusing, and I'm often unsure what is just fun speech and what is time-wasting. I may not fully understand what constitutes frivolous speech in our situation as lay people. Once in a while, though, we do have a sense that we're getting caught up in something that's, you know, really pretty silly. I have one example from several years ago. I was part of a Dharma group that met a few times a year for sitting and walking and Dharma discussion and to share a meal. So one day we were meeting and we were all just arriving, saying hello and chatting, when somehow, and I'm not even sure how, the subject of vampires came up. I think maybe someone mentioned that they'd gone to one of the Twilight movies or something like that, since this was pretty popular at that time. But surprisingly, this topic just really caught on. It seemed like everybody had their favorite vampire show or movie or book. You know, some were into the Twilight, some liked Anne Rice, some liked old vintage horror films. You know, I had this British TV series that I'd found that I really liked. And of course, we all preface this by saying that, of course, we really weren't into vampires, not at all, but this one show, this one book, you know. So we were talking along, and then at one point there was this pause, like maybe we sort of woke up about where we were going with this goofy conversation, and somebody said, "Do you think this would qualify as frivolous speech?" And we all kind of looked at each other and we're like nodding, "Oh yeah, yeah, we think so." So we had a good laugh about it and then we went on to start our first sit of the day. So, you know, like this example, for me a lot of times frivolous speech is more often funny and silly than really hurtful. And so I tend to worry more about speech that's actually harsh or spoken with ill will or unhelpful. But at the same time, I can see that frivolous speech might be an area I need to look into more deeply. Certainly, there are times when silly or frivolous speech is just not appropriate. And I might also ask myself if there are times when I keep the conversation light and frivolous to avoid discussing something that's uncomfortable. Or maybe I want to entertain or please the people I'm talking to. So that's something to consider too, and something I might do well to think more about. Another thing I've been reflecting on are the tools for right speech that are offered to us in Insight Dialogue, which Candace discussed a couple of weeks ago. And I have to admit that since I first heard about Insight Dialogue practice some years ago, I've had a little resistance to it. That might be because, you know, I was so attached to the silence that our traditional practices allow and didn't want to interrupt it with this speech practice. And maybe there was also some feeling that getting it all right was just too hard and too uncomfortable. So I just didn't want to do it, you know. Noble silence, that was the way to go, was what I was thinking. And yet after Candace's talk, I found myself reflecting that actually a lot of these suggestions from Insight Dialogue are really good things. A pause, for example, can really help. It's good if I pause to consider the effect of what I'm about to say. It's good if I pause if I find my conversation is going in a direction that isn't so wise or isn't so helpful. And to actually practice listening rather than thinking about my own responses and reactions. This is a really important skill that I'd do well to develop more fully. And I was also thinking that when I'm around someone who's really good at listening and drawing the other person out with questions, I ought to pay attention to them and learn from them, because this is another skill that I could really stand to develop further. And it's a really important way to show kindness and respect to others in conversation. And I'd been thinking, too, that, you know, I had sort of thought of the insight dialogue as a rather rigid sort of practice. But if I'm flexible in the way I apply them in conversation, it doesn't have to be that way. They can come up and be helpful in a way that's really natural. As I was thinking about them more, it was funny how, you know, sometimes these tools actually popped up day to day. The other day I was out, for example, with my grandnephew to do some shopping and go for lunch. And we got in the car, and at first he didn't say much. He was looking at his phone, you know, the way that 14-year-old boys often do. And so I started asking him questions about the visit he was just on to his mom's in Montana and what he was doing this summer and so forth. And he'd say a little bit to reply, but he didn't say a whole lot. So then the thought came to mind, trust emergence. That phrase just popped up. And so I stopped asking questions and let us be quiet for a little bit. And pretty soon he started talking about where we should go to lunch and other things, and the conversation just happened, and we had a really nice visit. And that made me realize that maybe I could trust emergence more than I think I can. And I'm hoping that these kind of things continue to happen with this and other insight dialogue tools that we use for wise speech. So those are some of my reflections on the past month. It felt like it was a month where there weren't huge earth-shattering revelations, but more a month where there was more awareness of my speech and what wise speech really is. And also a time when I would find myself in small ways, everyday ways, trying to be a little kinder, a little friendlier, a little more beneficial in my speech. So those are some of my experiences, and now we have time for you to share your experiences with wise speech this month. So now we will have our breakout rooms, and hopefully this is sort of kind of fueled your own thoughts about what happened to you over the month or so. And so you'll have some time to discuss that, you know, sharing with each other what you learned, what was especially rewarding, and what was especially challenging. And as we go into our breakout rooms, remember our guidelines for discussion. Really, this is a great opportunity to practice wise speech. You know, to speak kindly in a way that's beneficial, in a way that's timely. Give everyone a chance to speak without interrupting them, and listen with your full attention as much as you can. Avoid giving that unsolicited advice that it's so easy to want to give. And then remember to maintain confidentiality within the group, so people can feel like if they share something that's quite personal, they know that it's kept within the group. So I will go ahead and put you into your groups. Okay, so now we have some time after our discussion. I hope you guys had a good discussion to share with the larger group if you would like to do that. Maybe talk about, share something about some of your experiences or what you talked about in the group, whatever is coming to your mind right now that you would like to offer. And I also remember too that we'll officially close at 11:30, but I'll keep the room open for some extra time until noon if people want to stay and talk some more, either about our subject today or maybe just talking to get to know each other. But for now, let's share about wise speech and your experiences with wise speech. So you can, oh, Julie already is here raising her hand. Great. Go ahead. You can unmute yourself and go ahead.
Sorry, Linda. I didn't mean to interrupt you.
No, you didn't.
I just wanted to share something that came to my mind in our group that is really useful to me. I've noticed sort of that the deeper that I get into this practice, the more subtle my awareness is of, just how many aspects of all these, conditions there are. Like, take speech, right, for instance. Am I screaming profanities at people? Of course not, right? But the point that I wanted to make was that because I'm so subtly aware of all these little nuances that I never even came to mind before, sometimes it can seem like, oh, there's just so many things that could be improved upon. And so I just wanted to share with the group that one of my practices is, in terms of self-talk, to make myself aware of how far I've come in my practice, and have that be a regular part of my self-talk. I have a gratitude journal that is on my phone that I read every morning before I sit. And it's infused with that kind of self-talk, which is super helpful because we're human beings and there's lots of ways to improve. So, thank
Oh,
you.
thank you so much for sharing that, Julie. I also find that that is really important for me too, because my first impulse is to pick out all the things that I'm not doing right, where I need to improve. And so it really helps me to go over the things that actually went well or have improved or where I've learned something, to remind myself that
It's that
that
negativity bias
it's
that they
not
talk
yet
about.
right to kind of counteract the negativity bias. So thank you for sharing that. I think that all of us can benefit from that. Suze.
One of the people in my group asked me such a good question, because we were talking about idle chatter, or when we're in conversation that can be harsh or politically divisive or whatever. And I shared about wanting to try to change the topic of the conversation, but the way I have sometimes done it has been received as harsh and judgmental. And the person in my group asked me, well, why do you need to change the topic? And of course, the answer was because I was uncomfortable with it. And so then it just deepened this whole thing about intention with speech. And is it that it needs to be speech that I like? Talking about selfing and my intention and all that. Anyway, I really appreciated that question of, why am I speaking, and why am I trying to change what other people are talking about, even if I feel it's harsh and divisive? What do I do? Can I trust emergence there? I don't know. Anyway, it deepened my re things to reflect on around this.
Yeah, that is very, very challenging, I think. And I know too, there are times when I would want to change the conversation, and it might not be a so much a sense of judgment against those other people, but this feeling of this conversation is more than I can handle without veering off into saying something that's really unwise. And it sort of occurs to me that maybe that saying something like that might work, sort of saying, well, I don't want to say too much because I'm afraid that I might say something I'm going to regret, you know, something like that. I don't know, but it's a really challenging thing to sort of avoid the situation where we really get ourselves into trouble without coming across as judgmental. And when maybe it is necessary to say no to something, even if it does feel judgmental. I don't know. It's really tough. Very challenging. Lauren.
Yeah, I was noticing you talked about tone. I think you talked about tone of speech in self-talk more than to others. And I was thinking about that tone, and that often before I speak to myself or to someone else, the tone is there before I speak. So there's kind of an unpleasant tone or a pleasant tone, or there's an agitation or there's a peacefulness, and it makes a big difference in what comes out. Wow. And that that's really important, that it's really kind of a and so, for example, let's just take irritation. It's really easy to notice irritation. And I'm pretty sure that when I'm irritated, something harsh is going to come out. And I was thinking that sometimes I swear, but I swear to myself mostly. Mm-hmm. And so there's the harsh speech. And I've got this harsh, agitated tone before I even, you know, say the words. So I was just thinking it's helpful for me to avoid it or to get rid of it if I work on the tone. Because another thing is that if I'm agitated and harsh, if I meditate or do something like that, I can really switch and have a much better, even breathing, let's say breathing. So anyway, I just wanted to share that. It also goes with the talk last week with Judith, that someone was talking about body language. Mm-hmm. That the body language, too, is a big connector with our speech. And sometimes it's easier for me to work at that level.
Yeah, thank you, Lauren. Really good point. And, you know, it makes me realize how if we have that tone or body language that's a certain way, even if the words we say are not harsh or divisive, they could be received
right
in that way because there's this tone to them that the other person is just really aware of that irritation or whatever it is. So, yeah, I think it is important to notice it. And if we can pause before we speak when we're caught up in that, not very kind tone to do so. We can't always do it. You know, sometimes things are moving too fast in conversation to be able to do it. But if we can, it's good. Thank you for bringing that up. And I also, you know, noticed this kind of thought of just being aware of it more often in our own experience. So we kind of know as a general thing. That can help us too. Oh, thank you. Let's see. Jerry? Oh, I think it's almost time. Do you have something quick?
Just real quick. I just agreeing. I mean, to what Lauren brought up. But yeah, the stage is set. The valley of knowing how the stage is set, even before the mouth opens up.
Yeah.
So that's worth paying attention. So thank you. And you emphasize that as well. So enough. Thank
you. Okay. Well, I'm going to go ahead now and go ahead with our announcements. And after that, when I finished with that and we formally end, those who want to stay on and continue talking about this subject are more than welcome, because maybe we didn't have enough time for everyone to share what they wanted to share. So we will have some more time. But in the meantime, for those who do need to go, a few announcements. And of course, your Donna is always welcome. If you want to offer Donna to your teachers or to the SIMS organization, it's greatly appreciated, and it's really a gift to all of us in the Sangha. So let's just take a few moments as we end to share the merit of our practice today. Maybe there's a special person you want to share with that you can bring to mind. May they share in the goodwill that is generated and the force for good that is generated by our practice today. And then extending this to all beings as much as we can. May all beings be happy and peaceful, and may they benefit from our kind and thoughtful speech.
Bye, everybody. I can't stay. It was just lovely
being
with Sangha today.